All right. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. On the agenda today, we're going to, I think, conclude the DNR budget, and then we'll have a presentation from the Minnesota Conservation Corps at the end of the Budget Committee. And let me announce now, in case any of you have to leave early, that the full committee will not meet Thursday. Instead, Senator Rummel's subcommittee on clean water will meet at the regular time. All right, let's start off with Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And I need to start off with an apology and a correction. So in front of you, I've distributed the revised fact sheet for the forest management investment account reduction that we were talking about. I did get a little off track in presenting FTE numbers to the committee. We have gone back and clarified this, and you'll see under the first paragraph under major program elements, the reduction of the forest management investment account would have a potential impact of 76 FTEs over the course of the biennium, FY 10 and 11. And then the $2 million new general fund for that same period would allow us to retain 25 FTEs. So the question that came up is, what was the net impact of the reduction plus the influx of the $2 million? And that number is approximately 51 FTEs.
Mr. Meyer, I'm going to ask you to look at the budget pages and show us where this is reflected in the budget pages, because I don't think we've been spending enough time actually looking at those.
All right. One second to get them there.
20.
Is it 16?
Where? You want the actual spreadsheet?
I don't know yet. 54?
Yeah, 54 and 55. Paper in our lives.
Madam Chair, does Mr. Mueller have a page number that he's looking at there?
54 or 55, perhaps?
Okay. 54 is the overall forest management spreadsheet. And you can look at here, the top part deals with the direct appropriations by fund, Madam Chair, with the totals there. The governor's recommendation is $26,452,000 in 10 and 11, including all funding sources. Then if you go below that, the one-time appropriations of 1.1 represent some of the heritage dollars, I believe. Going down, the forest management investment account reductions, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, is what we're actually talking about on this. Fact sheet, you can see the reduction of $5 million in 10, $6.1 million in 11. And then if you go down to the bottom of that column, Madam Chair, you can see the other governor's recommendations for forest management, the heritage enhancement account dollars of $950,000 each of those years, and the one-time $250,000 general fund for our forest productivity for the future report recommendations process.
Okay. And then do we have the FTEs listed somewhere on a different page?
Madam Chair, if you go to the next page, page 55, the bottom lists the FTEs. And you can see if you look at current FY 2009, 560.9. And then if you go on that bottom line over to FY 2011, it's 516.9. One of the problems that we have is I'm not sure all of the – we would have to go to the BBS system to actually get the most current numbers, and I don't have a copy of that with me right now. But these numbers that I just presented do reflect what's in the system at this point in time, Madam Chair.
So the – okay. Let's see. This doesn't break down the positions at all. So it's hard to tell if that's got some, that's a net number and includes some additions and some subtractions, I take it?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I can provide more detailed information to the committee with the total actual positions that would be affected by this, this would be reduction in the account.
TEs less without the $2 million.
Okay. Okay, questions? Is everyone following these pages? Yeah, all right. All right.
All right, Madam Chair, thank you very much for allowing us to go back and clarify that. The goal of today is go through the Division of Enforcement's budget and also the operations support budget, and then answer any overall questions that people may have, and that would conclude our presentation. With me, I do have Captain Jim Conrad, who's our acting administrative manager for the Division of Forestry, to help us out. The Division of Enforcement, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Presentation outline, as they have been through previously, talking about the enforcement budget and critical trends, strategic objectives, and then priority outcomes and measures, and then the change items that we have. Division of Enforcement's budget is fairly simple, with a small amount of general fund, $6.8 million or 10%, 24.5% or $16.2 million from the Natural Resources Fund, $200,000 from the Special Revenue Fund, $39.7 million from the General or the Game and Fish Fund, and $3.2 million from the federal funds. This slide here, Madam Chair, just talks about the population that the Division of Enforcement serves. We train over 40,000 citizens in education, safety, firearm safety, boat and water, ATV, snowmobile safety. 1.4 million licensed anglers is the population we work with during the summer seasons. 578,000 licensed hunters and trappers, 866,000 boaters, 251,000 snowmobile riders, and 264,000 all-terrain vehicle riders. Our focus is to make sure that people are safe as they're out enjoying the natural resources and they're abiding by the laws, to ensure public safety and protect natural resources through the use of a network of 160 community-based conservation officers and our specially trained officers that we've gone towards, wetland reserve officers, our aviation unit, special investigation unit officers, and others. Education is key, working with our volunteer instructors and our regional training officers, and then administer the grants to local enforcement agencies for boat and water safety, snowmobile, off-highway vehicle safety and enforcement. The strategic objectives that the division deals with: protect natural resources and public safety through the quality education and law enforcement, environmental protection, fisheries and game protection, water recreation, public safety and service, recreational equipment safety and training. Now I'm going to turn it over to Captain Conrad, and he's going to go specifically into each one of these strategic objectives, and then we'll talk about the budget here in a few minutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Kubling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Myers, I know it's kind of a small piece of the budget, maybe, but I wonder, you know, has the DNR ever checked with, like Federal Cartridges here in town? It seems to me they would have a vested interest in offering, gun safety programs for some of the people that you offered for. I don't know. I mean, would that be a small way that we could alleviate some of the workload on the DNR and pass it off to a private entity that would have, a special interest in seeing that kind of program is preserved?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, that's a great idea. We do work with all of those sponsors, Federal Cartridge, Polaris, Articat, throughout the state. Our safety training program is built upon the backbone of volunteer officers. All of our instructors are volunteers. They do act as an agent of the state. I am an active firearm safety and bow hunter education instructor, but it's the volunteers that make that successful. We have regional training officers in each region that work with a network of volunteers, but really they provide them with the information, and then they go out and they talk to the class. There's a session on where the enforcement officer comes out and meets with the class, answers their questions, does a presentation. But we do run it on a very bare-bones budget. It,
okay.
It really focuses on the printed materials that are out there, and we're moving more towards web-based materials wherever possible and trying to figure out how what is the best tool to provide that safety training that's out there. And, you know, working with those sponsors are very important to us. Gander Mountain, Cabela's, Sportsman's Warehouse, all of these sporting goods stores, the network out there throughout the state, they provide classes, they host, they donate a lot of materials for the kids. The Trappers Association, the trapper education that the legislature required, that they wanted to have be mandatory, they developed the program and they administer it. So it's really the goodwill of the volunteers out there that make our program a success.
Okay, well, Senator Kublik. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Myers. You understand that, you know, most of us are kind of looking for a way to save a few bucks. I guess I wasn't aware that that was done by volunteers, but I appreciate the information.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Pariseau.
Madam Chair, in addition to what Mr. Meyer mentioned, Senator Kublik, there are a lot of organizations, the sporting clubs and Eagles, VFW Legions, and often they also supply space and sometimes ammunition or purchase the guns for the group that does the training, which are all volunteers, as Mr. Meyer said.
Okay.
So, I mean, you get a lot of philanthropic help on it because people are all understanding the need for that kind of training, especially for youth.
Madam Chair, members, as I mentioned, now we'll have Captain Conrad go through the strategic objectives with more detail and then talk about the budget numbers.
Madam Chair, for the record, Captain Jim Conrad, Acting Administrative Manager, Division of Enforcement. Our first strategic objective is environmental protection. That involves programs such as Wetlands Conservation Act, Operation Bird's Eye View, which is a component of that Wetlands Conservation Act, water quality enforcement, invasive species, and other environmental protection such as solid waste, litter, and that sort of thing. We increased our invasive species activity in the past biennium with the help of Ecological Resources. They provided funding for 4.5 FTEs to increase our diligence in trying to prevent the spread of invasive species, both terrestrial and aquatic, in the state of Minnesota. In the next slide.
Okay.
Our outcomes, basically in enforcement, our outcomes are hours of service provided. We don't judge our success on the number of citations and warnings and that sort of thing that we issue. We would rather that those numbers go down or be non-existent. That would prove that enforcement is having an effect out there. But in order to show the type of service that we do, we rely on number of hours provided to specific activities. And in this slide, we show the number of Wetlands Conservation Act enforcement that we've provided since 1999. Last year, we provided 16,492 hours total, with 12,754 hours devoted to Wetlands Conservation Act. In support of that, the Bird's Eye View program provided 130 hours of flight time with our division aircraft to identify potential wetland impacts. Of that, also there were 2,400 hours devoted by the officers on the ground to that particular program. As a result of that program, we identified 431 possible impacts and issued cease and desist orders on those impacts. Out of those, 304 were Wetlands Conservation Act impacts, 99 were public water impacts, and 28 were aquatic plant management impacts. Out of those 431 cease and desists, 166 restoration orders were issued. And of those, 65 were rescinded because the individuals ceased the activity and no further impact was recorded.
Okay, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Captain. Could you give me an example of one of these restoration orders and you know, what had to be done and then why some might be rescinded, just so that I have a better picture of what it is you do?
I can, Madam Chair, Senator, I can kind of walk you through the process. If one of our airplanes is up in the air looking at possible impacts, and a lot of times they're up there doing other things, but they happen to notice something of that effect, they will GPS the location. And
what kind of an impact? What are you seeing?
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, Senator, it would be either filling or draining of a wetland.
Okay.
So that's what we consider to be an impact. And once identified, that information is relayed to the officer on the ground so that he can go on site and actually, you know, put his feet on that location and find out if there is actually a violation occurring. There are de minimis requirements, and there are actually permitted impacts, or the individual might even have a permit on record. The officer would check all that prior to taking any actions. If the indication is that there is an impact that is in violation of any of these rules or regulations, a cease and desist order, which is a civil order, is issued by the officer, which makes the individual causing that damage or impact to cease all activity at that time until it can be further investigated. If it's determined that there is a violation, a restoration order would be issued to have that impact reversed. In other words, if he drained it, he would have to refill it. If he filled it, he would have to take that fill back out. If he would fail to honor that, the cease and desist or the restoration order, at that point we can take another step and go to a criminal process where a citation is actually issued and the individual has to appear in court and that sort of thing. The cease and desist or the restoration order would be rescinded if we had compliance from the individual who caused the original impact.
Thank you.
Our second strategic objective is fisheries and game protection, and that is a very, very big part of our job. That's the traditional game warden work that we do, checking hunters and fishermen. Fisheries enforcement, game enforcement, and also out of that game and fish fund is the monies that we use in that firearm safety training, including advanced hunter ed. In the next slide.
Excuse me, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Captain Conrad. Before you go on, I just to comment on that, maybe from your perspective, and I have gotten some feedback anecdotally, I think, from people that live in Mille Lacs, Red Lake area, and talking about disparate levels of enforcement depending on, I guess, there are some tribal chain differences in how laws are understood or enforced. And can you just comment on what is that relationship and how that works with the DNR when they're dealing with that, with those fisheries that may have conflicting jurisdictional apparatus, I guess. I don't know but there seem to be problems that I've heard of, and I just wanted to get some comment from you on how that works and what your take on that is.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Captain Conrad.
We certainly have those issues. And like you said, Mille Lacs and Red Lake seem to be the most obvious ones. In those cases, the officers, we enforce the state law on the non-band members. If we run into situations involving band members, those reservations have their own conservation officers that will deal with those issues. And the rules are not the same for band members or for non-band members on the same body of water or sometimes on the same parcels of land.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Captain, that was one of the questions. Is the jurisdictional authority apply geographically, or could there be, say, one geography, whether it's land or water, that has two different authorities depending on who's on it? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that's what I'm saying. And in the case of Red Lake, it's a sovereign nation where we don't even set foot on their part of the lake. I mean, there's an imaginary line there, obviously, that nobody, and I'm sure maybe you're aware of the situation where boats and airplanes have been confiscated by the tribe. In that situation, there isn't a lot of interaction. We stay on our side of the line. They stay on their side. It's in places like Mille Lacs where there's a lot of intermingled jurisdictional issues that we are more cooperative with the local tribal conservation officers.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Cam Conner, just one, I guess, last question about this issue. The DNR and maybe your department relationship with the band's authority, is this a good relationship? Is this productive? Is it working? Is it something that needs to be evaluated? I mean, just how would you characterize the department's relationship with these issues in conflicting jurisdictions, I guess?
Madam Chair, Senator, it varies between the bands and, you know, the officers. We have very good relationships with some of them, and others are more closed reservations where we don't have much interaction at all and really don't take any sort of cooperative action with those people. So it's across the board when it comes to that. We do have very good working relationships with the Mille Lacs group and also the Leech Lake and the White Earth. We tend to have, with those open reservations, we have very good working relationships with those. Some of them, like Net Lake or Red Lake, you know, that's a foreign country that we just don't have very much interaction at all. Occasionally they ask us for technical assistance, but the hands-on part of it, no, we don't have any interaction at all. And maybe it is something that we need to explore in the future.
So, Captain, on the tribes that you mentioned that you have better working relationships with, do you enforce Minnesota laws on those tribal lands?
Madam Chair.
Against non-tribe members?
Yes, Madam Chair, to non-tribe members, yes, we would enforce Minnesota state laws on those open reservations to non-tribal members.
Do you have any Native American membership in your ranks? Any conservation officers who come from any of those tribes?
Madam Chair, yes, we do. I know of two off the top of my head. I would guess there might be a couple more in there. And then also I'm quite familiar with some of the officers who work for those tribes and have known them for a long time and worked well with them in the past.
Okay.
Great. All right.
Strategic, I'm really having trouble with that word. Strategic objective three is water recreation. That's our boat and water safety and public access enforcement part of our work. Most of that activity is enforcing boat and water safety laws on the waters of Minnesota. We also have pass-through grants that go to local law enforcement for a number of other activities. That amounts to about a little over $1 million a year in pass-through grants. Those are administered by Kim Elverum from our Information and Education Division, or Bureau, and those are for additional patrol and enforcement, search and rescue, marking of waterways, hazard removal, accident, drowning investigations, and rental boat inspections that are done by the counties throughout the state. Those grants are administered through a formula of 60% is based on the prior year's enforcement activity, 35% based on boating use in that particular county, and 5% on other, which are just miscellaneous things taken into account in administering those grants.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Parisot.
Madam Chair, is that carried out through the Sheriff's Office most of the time in most of the counties of the state?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. I think in almost all cases it's Sheriff's Departments. I don't know of any local law enforcement that gets the boat and water safety grants.
Boat and water safety
grants. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Captains, when we're talking about the pass-through grants, are they coming from any particular pots? Are they coming from taxes of on ATVs or snowmobiles? Or
Madam Chair, Senator, my understanding is those are federal grants and also a result of boat and water. We do not pass those grants through from ATV or snowmobile. We do have grants that we give to local to sheriff's departments and stuff based or for snowmobile and ATV work that are based on monies that are taken from those registrations. So it's a segregated funding.
Thank you.
But I would think that when the sheriffs get the funds, they, you know, they get some for this and some for that, but they have to aggregate it maybe into one person's work.
Madam Chair,
you can't hire a different person for a pot of money.
Yeah, Madam Chair, a lot of times they just go into their pot, and then they do what work they need to do.
Do they have to account for, you know, their time on out of each category like the state COs do?
Madam Chair, yes, they do. They have to file a report each year on the activity and the work that they've done as a result of getting those grants. Our next strategic objective is public safety and service, and that is the portion of our job where we respond to citizen calls for service and support police and sheriff's law enforcement efforts for activities such as disaster response and search and rescue. An example of that, last week, the shooting of the deputy in Manoman, we had four officers that immediately responded to that situation and were part of the barricaded suspect. And the picture of the officer and the dog here, actually 2 weeks ago, they apprehended an armed robber out of Brooklyn Center. Officer happened to be in the neighborhood when the call came out and observed the individual leaving the scene of the crime, and an apprehension was made. That kind of shows the on-the-spot efforts of our officers as they're out there and how they are considered to be part of the law enforcement community throughout the state and a valuable part of that. Also, in the past couple of years, we've had a very visible presence at various disasters throughout the state, including the Southeast flood, the bridge collapse. I was on site at the bridge collapse within 15 minutes of that call. And we had other officers that provided site security for several weeks afterwards as the reconstruction and the work was being done at that site. And also, there's a guy sitting behind me that responded to the Hugo tornado. He was on site within minutes after that storm hit. That just shows the community involvement that our officers have when it comes to law enforcement.
And is that just sort of done ad hoc? There's no, like, official... Well, obviously, in an emergency, you just go. You don't wait and get it, you know, the funding approved. But is there any kind of a try to build back and forth for those kinds of assistance?
Madam Chair, no. There's no mutual aid agreements or anything. Our officers understand that public safety is, you know, number one thing. They drop what they're doing. They assist other officers. They assist in situations like the Hugo tornado. You know, just we're there. We're part of the community, and we're a law enforcement officer. We respond like anybody else would.
And how many dog FTEs do we have?
Madam Chair, currently we have two dog FTEs.
Okay.
One of them is starting to get a little long in the tooth, so to speak, and only maybe has a couple more years left. But we like to keep at least two of them on board, and they are specially trained not only as police dogs, but also to detect weapons and to detect fish and game. Madam Chair, I was asked to add, one of them was, the funding for one was provided by the Safari Club. Actually, it didn't come out of our budget. So we do solicit donations for those programs.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. How much, the dog or the puppy itself, how much does it cost? Are they're purebred, I presume, and you need a particular breed, I presume?
Maybe
I'm wrong. Maybe you can confirm that. How much does one cost? Even if it was donated, how much? What's the value? And then I presume there's many thousands in training, but.
Madam Chair, Senator, I can't answer that. I can find it out for you, but I do know that we, in particular, have been using German Shepherds, and a particular breeder. I believe it's overseas, I think Czechoslovakia maybe. So, yes, it's probably a pretty substantial sum to get those animals over here, and once again, the training. However, we aren't limited to that species. I know that other states have had very good luck using Labrador retrievers and using German shorthairs. You know, not so much in the police dog mode, but as detectors of game and fish and firearms for the officers in the field.
When you provided officers for the RNC last August, September, how did that get billed out?
Madam Chair, that was an agreement that was signed. That wasn't one of those things that we just responded to. That agreement involved reimbursement for all of our costs. We have received those costs, and those costs have been deposited back into our accounts to replenish those accounts from which they came.
And where'd the reimbursement come from? Directly from the federal government?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So then we should have some extra. Well, it came from the federal government to replace the enforcement funds that were spent?
Madam Chair, that's correct. I believe most of the funding came from our general fund allocation, which would be appropriate with the public safety use of that money.
Okay. So have you made any budget adjustments in general fund dollars as a result of that?
Madam Chair, we reimburse the general fund with the money that we receive from the federal reimbursement.
Madam Chair, we can provide a full cost accounting of those appropriations that we did expend and what we have received. I thought that we had worked with Senate fiscal staff. Maybe I'm mistaken on that. It was probably the House staff who we were working with. I thought you were CC'd on that, Mr. Mueller, and I do apologize. Madam Chair, on a similar note, I'm hoping to deliver to you tomorrow a letter that will outline how we have reimbursed all of the accounts from the costs associated with the NAWEA conference. Mm-hmm. So we have met the auditor's requirements. We are in the process of unallotting those dollars, making the water rec, snowmobile, all-terrain, game and fish fund, remediation funds whole. So we're just waiting for a few edits on that letter, and we will distribute that to you hopefully tomorrow, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. And then I think what Senator Bach had suggested last summer about the RNC was that, you know, there was some general fund money that should be reduced because we lost some state services at the time of that RNC work because there was a lot of hours put into that. Is that part of the memo that you're going to send us?
Madam Chair, it is not, but I can include specific information under separate cover that will deal with that issue and work
like
with fiscal staff on that.
The dollars on that.
Strategic objective number five, recreational enforcement and safety training and education. That deals with our law enforcement services and training for ATV, off-highway motorcycle, off-road vehicle, and snowmobiles, and some non-motorized activities as well. Supporting programs include safety training and education, ATV, OHM, ORV, and snowmobile enforcement, parks, trails, forestry, and other non-motorized enforcement activity, and grants to local law enforcement. Last year, we provided $498,000 in ATV grants and $315,000 in snowmobile grants that the division administered to the counties for additional enforcement work in those categories. That formula of providing those grants are based on acres of public lands and wetlands, off-highway vehicle use, and miles or trails in each of the counties.
So do those enforcement grants include to the clubs, like the ambassador, to the ATV clubs? Are you considering that part of the enforcement?
Madam Chair, that $498,000 in the ATV grants, that does not include the $225,000 in the ambassador program. That's a separate program that is dedicated to that particular function.
Now, I've heard some reports on at least one of the clubs that received some of that funding that was doing some some misuse of trails. And I'm wondering if you have, how do you hold those clubs accountable for the dollars that they have to make sure that they're being well used?
Madam Chair, that's administered by Captain Hammer out of Camp Ripley, and I'm at a loss to be able to answer that. I'm not as close to that program as I am to some of the others, but I will certainly find that out for you and provide you with the information.
Thank you. It'd be nice to know what information they're reporting back about the usage of the dollars, and how are we ensuring that the clubs are modeling responsible behavior, and if there's consequences if they're not.
Madam Chair, we will provide that information to the committee.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Captain Conrad, I keep hearing kind of a steady trickle of complaints about ATVs and where they are ridden, and occasionally about wetlands and ATVs. What have you been experiencing, particularly with ATVs and wetlands? And have you been issuing citations for violating that law?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, we have been increasing our enforcement of those wetland impacts. We consider those to be just as damaging as if somebody is draining or filling a wetland. In some cases, they're more damaging. And we have been addressing those through aggressive ATV enforcement in areas that have those impacts, as well as spending some airtime in enforcing those issues.
Senator Fredrickson.
And Madam Chair, Captain Conrad, are the penalties that we have in state law, are they severe enough to deter possible violators, or is that something we, in your opinion, we should look at and reexamine?
Madam Chair, Senator, the penalties are no different than, you know, the other penalties for ATV riding. Where we get a little more, bite is in that we can charge them with damage to the wetland and require them to do repairs, just like we do with the restoration orders for WACA violations and such. So we can ask for restitution and restoration of those wetlands to be part of the adjudication in those cases.
How often does that happen?
Madam Chair, not very often, because a lot of those violations go undetected. It only takes somebody a couple of seconds to run through a wetland, and we obviously aren't there all the time. But those that we have had a couple of them with significant impacts where that has taken place, where that remediation has been asked for.
Okay. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't pass this opportunity because you may know that in my district, in my city, there is a movement taking place to combine law enforcement activities of regular law enforcement and this type of law enforcement in the parks. And the argument is that if we train regular law enforcement officers in these duties, we will save a lot of money in terms of, you know, use of vehicles and all kinds of areas that are associated with law enforcement. And I would like to hear your best argument against that or for that. I suppose you're going to have an argument against that, but I am curious about your perspective in terms of combining those law enforcement activities.
Madam Chair, Senator, I was going to say I'm not necessarily against that. There are a lot of the real difficulty is meshing those traditional law enforcement officers into the recreational and environmental law enforcement part of it, because there are different skills and different knowledge sets that are required for that. We have always had this discussion within our own division and other conservation officer groups around the country. What makes the best conservation officer? And a lot of states say, well, you got to be a law enforcement officer and we can teach you the biology. And then there are others that say, well, you got to be a biologist and we can teach you how to write a ticket. That argument goes back and forth. And I happen to have come from the law enforcement job to the conservation officer job, but I had the makings of a conservation officer because I have a wildlife 3 years towards a wildlife management degree. So I kind of was the best of both worlds there. But we are struggling with that, and there are more and more situations where the local conservation officer will have to pick up some of those environmental duties. And we don't oppose that. We welcome it because extra hands and extra eyes out there are very important to catching those people, especially the ones that we don't get to see because there are so few of us out there. In most cases, local law enforcement has a 24-hour-a-day presence as opposed to a conservation officer who covers a full county by himself. He can't work 24 hours a day there. So it's not something that we're opposed to. We would welcome it. I don't know how to do it, though, without maybe some influx of funding for those local law enforcement agencies to expand their roles.
Thank you.
And Senator Choice, it's an interesting question. I wish you luck in Minneapolis on that, but I'm not sure. I mean, if you had police officers who had to deal with the local homicides and assaults and bank robberies, they might think that, you know, checking the length of fish that people are catching might kind of drop to the bottom of importance in if they had to cover all those bases in their day-to-day activities. So I don't know. There's a lot of factors involved, but in Minneapolis, it might be the right approach. So good luck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We could have a long conversation about this, but I just wanted to hear their opinion.
I'm sure there's a lot of advantages as well.
Madam Chair, members, now moving on to talk about some of the budget pressures the Division of Enforcement is facing. The enforcement legacy costs, as we're calling them, do continue to grow, and there are contractual obligations that remain that we have to fund out of our general fund budgets, employer contributions to pensions. Legislative changes increase the employer contributions for pensions for fiscal year 10 and beyond, and these are at $500,000 per year above the fiscal year 07 costs. As our enforcement fleet or division retires, more of them age, our retirement costs continue to increase, and this is one of the areas that we do not receive increased funding for. Also, the health insurance for retirees, an officer who retires, and they can retire at age 55, their costs are paid until an officer reaches the Medicare age, so their insurance costs are paid. And these costs, as everyone knows, have been increasing at 12% per year. And the increase just from 08 to 09 in this category was $70,000. And also just contracted severance costs increased beginning at fiscal year 08, increases the amount paid per officer upon retirement by $10,000. The total of these unfunded legacy costs that the division is having to absorb currently is $1.5 million a year. And those costs will increase, as we talked about, because of contractual obligations, the fleet, and the health care issues that are there. So it is a pressure that the department is facing. It's a little bit more impacted in the Department of Division of Enforcement just because of their contractual package that they do, the benefits they do receive.
And is that union, I mean, does that contract go beyond DNR COs, or is it a broader contract that's negotiated?
Madam Chair, that contract covers conservation officers, DCA agents, and state troopers, and I believe the gambling enforcement is also in there.
Okay. And the new people that are hired, do they have the same benefits, you know, that they can expect to retire at 55 and get the health care, et cetera?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Yeah, that's a generous package.
Madam Chair, just focusing back on the priority outcomes for the division. This slide here focuses on the outcomes of 2010 and 11 enforcement hourly goals. You can see that our targets are to provide annual hourly enforcement goals for fisheries enforcement, 85,000 hours, 77,500 for game enforcement, 21,500 for boat and water safety, 9,000 for snowmobile enforcement, 16,000 hours for off-road recreational vehicle, and 9,000 hours for wetlands enforcement. The budget that we have presented for FY 10 and 11 will allow us to meet these goals. And just a trend slide here, Madam Chair and members, field officer conservation levels, just on September 1st of each year, you can see the numbers. In 2007, we were almost at a full complement, something that we worked very hard. We had several academies to reach that goal. But retirements have been increasing once again, so they're creeping up a little bit. We're almost at 20 again right now. It's something we need to figure out. What is the right size of our enforcement division? How do we maintain them? How large are their districts? How large should they be? And what should their workload really be? But this just shows projected levels in 2010 and 11, but our retirements still remain the same. We're still off of full complement as we were in 2007. Madam Chair, I just want to go through this slide, then we can go to the budget book for a little bit. But this shows the governor's recommendation for the enforcement budget for 10 and 11 was 17.2% from the Natural Resources Fund, 61% from the Game and Fish Fund, $242,000 or 0.4% of special revenue funds, 3.4% from federal funding, and about 9.5% from general fund. And this next slide here really breaks that down in a little bit more detail than your budget book actually has. It shows the general fund recommendations for 10 and 11 at $6.2 million. And then the governor's budget does not have any increases nor decreases. It remains, it keeps the enforcement division at basically 08-09 levels if you take away the one-time funding that was appropriated last biennium. And that breaks down at $7.6 million, roughly, water rec, $3.364 million, snowmobile, $5.568 million for ATV, off-highway motorcycles, $252,000, off-road vehicles at $426,000, game and fish fund operations, actual salary operations at $38,062,000, game and fish heritage dollars, which are specified only for the purposes of the heritage enhancement account, at $2.328 million, and then other funds that we talked about, general or federal funds and things of that nature, at $2.49 million, for a total of the total is actually $66 million, as we talked about in the previous slide. If you look at your budget book on page 135, 135 and 136 are actual, the program summary and the budget activity summary, Madam Chair. You can see those levels remaining constant. After you take out the one-time appropriations on the top there, the natural resource appropriations for 10 and 11 are based upon the FY 09 actual allocated amounts. The Game and Fish Fund Operations Appropriation, again, are based upon FY09 actuals of $19,000,970 per year. Remediation Fund are dollars that we get from the Environmental Fund to do solid waste management, on-site burning, things of that nature, $100,000 per year. You can see down in the expenditures, they just track the numbers up above. Under miscellaneous revenue, we're tracking roughly $18,000 per year. This is forfeited property, things of that nature that we would get and dispose of. The federal dollars are basically those boat and water safety grants from the federal dollars that we spoke of at $1.124 million per year in the next biennium. And then the FTEs do remain flat under the full-time equivalents that are based here, but we do have some retirements that we are anticipating that we know will take place over the next fiscal year.
So you're intending to fill those?
Madam Chair, it's an issue of will we be able to fill them or not. Currently, our budget, as we talked about, those unfunded mandates that are there do represent an increase of $1.5 million per year for costs. And an issue that we need to discuss more is the overtime. Currently, the legislature appropriates a 400-hour per officer overtime appropriation for our field officers, the 160 field officers that we mentioned, and the cost of that is not represented in this budget. And that will have an added cost that is there, depending on what level, approximately $2.4 million if the legislature were to appropriate that 400 hours of overtime. for the field officer.
So that's what it would be in the next biennium, about $2.4 million. How much of that is general fund?
Madam Chair,
just the same breakdown?
It could be funded. I think historically it's been funded through the funding stream breakdown that has been out there, which does have a component of general fund to it.
What percent is general fund again? 10% about?
Yeah, 9-10%, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. So if we, when we guarantee that overtime, if we didn't do that, I don't know how many years we've been doing that. I know for quite a while. If we didn't do that, does that mean no officers would get overtime, or it would just be we don't know how much overtime? Would anyone go below? No one would go
below
full time.
Those are discussions that we need to have going into the future in the next several weeks, is talking about what the impacts would be. Everybody would receive their full complement of time. I think what we would need to try to figure out is how can we manage the time in the workforce to meet the expectations and needs of the citizens of the state of Minnesota.
So, okay.
They have to do it. They just guarantee.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Captain Conrad, I'm curious, does the department have and utilize an undercover unit?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, they do. It's a pretty small unit.
And Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, Captain Conrad, I won't ask for more questions about it than that, but I am curious about the what has the trend been on gross over limit of game? Has it been an increase or stable, or of individuals that you've apprehended that have virtually made a business, say, of over limit of fish?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's hard to say without looking at statistics. It seems that we have had a bit of an increase in that just from what I'm seeing in the paper and what I'm reading in our Monday morning reports. But I can't tell you definitively whether we have seen a trend upward or not. I can find that out for you.
I'm sure.
Madam Chair, I would find that interesting.
Well, if there's any trends of, you know, that are noticeable in terms of where violations are headed, that would be interesting information.
I'm sure.
Senator Vickerman?
I'm Chair, just curious, on the governor's enforcement, he's looking at $66 million, am I reading this right?
Yes.
What did that, is any cuts from something? Or I'm not going to cut veterans in ag if we don't take a whack at some of these, I can tell you that right now.
So you want us to cut so you can have it? Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, the Department of Natural Resources overall budget reduction is $7.2 million of our general fund appropriation. Our general fund for the department is roughly $72 million, so overall the department is taking a $7.2 million general fund reduction. The one benefit that the Enforcement Division has and the department has in some areas, such as Fish and Wildlife, are the user fees that people pay for the services that they expect. Trails, parks are the same way. So most of the funding, 90% plus of the funding for the Division of Enforcement, as you can see here, comes from those dedicated accounts to police those users who are paying for their boat licenses, their snowmobile licenses and trail stickers, ATV licenses, game fish hunting licenses and fishing licenses. So I do understand your question and your concern, Senator Vickerman, overall, and we'll be talking about another $2 million reduction agency-wide here in a few minutes, but the department is looking at areas where we are reducing general fund to minimize the impacts to the state of Minnesota and the citizens out there.
Madam
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, Mr. Myers, we'll visit on this issue another day, but when I pick up the paper and they don't want you to case your guns.
That's not us.
No, it's not you, but your officers are going to have the work to do. I can't think of
That's
a more
true.
Dangerous thing to do. Everybody out there that lives in Rida, we know enough to unload our guns, put them in a case, lift them up, even if we go 50 feet. I can't see any sense in. You want to talk about people getting shot.
Is that bill?
Accidentally, that's the way to do it.
Is there a Senate bill?
Senator Anderson, Senator Vickerman, we appreciate that.
That comes through.
Has that bill been introduced on the Senate side? Do we know?
Never heard anything as dumb as that.
Have you seen that? Senator Pariseau, do you know about that bill?
Tony Corn is supposed to do it.
I've heard about it in the newspaper.
We haven't had a judiciary fishing, you know, so far.
I've certainly read about it, too.
Perhaps you could join me in the House as we testify on that bill.
Now you need the passion.
Madam Chair, if there's no more questions, I'll move on to operations support. I'm just going to run through this. I do have Denise Anderson, our Chief Financial Officer, available if we do have any questions. You'll have a presentation, the last of your packet. This is titled Operations Support. The division of our operations support is our Office of Management and Budget Services, our regional operations, and commissioner's office. It's going to talk about strategic objectives and priority outcomes in the overall budget. This slide is a little bit misleading, Madam Chair, members. The 50.7% of the environmental trust fund dollars that come from the LCCMR recommendations that the department handles as a fiscal agent that we distribute out to the beneficiaries of the legislation that awards those dollars to them. We do a lot of the grant contracting fiscal side of those dollars for the commission. So if you take that away, the operations support budget,
that's the whole thing.
It's substantially less.
Well, wait. Mr. Meyer, how much of that is from the
$17.8 million was appropriated to the department for some of the department's projects, but also some of the pass-through grant projects like outstate corridors, metro corridors, other acquisitions and projects that, as the legislation that your commission, actually you're carrying the bill this year, Madam Chair, they appropriate the money to the department, then we pass it through to the actual grantee.
How much of it, can you break that down for me to say how much of that is for your grant or your budget requests from the LCCMR for work done by the DNR, and how much of it is administering the pass-through grants from the LCCMR?
Madam Chair, do you mean the cost that it costs, the dollars it costs the department to distribute those dollars?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have those numbers right in front of me. It's a fairly, I think we get a direct appropriation actually from the commission to do those activities.
I can check then.
And we can provide that more detail to you on that as well. But you can see the other fund that we have is 14% general fund, natural resources fund at 2.6 million or 7.4%, special revenue fund 2.7 million, game and fish fund 6.2 million, and $5 million of federal funding that we received last biennium, or this current biennium. A couple of the critical trends that we face are the advances in science, technology, and information management, increasingly needed to address natural resource challenges, accountability to results, just as you're all very interested in outcomes and performance measurement, we are as well. The activities of our strategic conservation agenda, much of our reports and research come from these activities within this area, and also integrated resource management, working across the division to achieve our goals. Complex natural resources issues such as renewable energy, which influences all of our divisions, fish and wildlife, ecological resources, forestry, and our parks and trails as we operate, goes across the board, and a lot of our management activities come from this area. As I mentioned, the strategic conservation agenda, which is available on our website, it does go back, I think, to the inception of 2003. You can follow those trends here. Central operations support, regional operations support, and also recreation and local grant-making activities. The local initiative grants program is also housed in this area of the department. You can see under central operations support, provide leadership to the department by integrating department operations and formulating and establishing department policies and procedures. Communication with the executive branch and legislative branch to take place here. This is the area that I work out of. Directed budgeted and accounting policy for effective use of approximately $300 million per year. Our auditing functions have gone up significantly. We take a very strong, serious approach to our auditing. We have hired some new auditors that are spending a lot of time making sure that all of our appropriations and expenditures are spent in accordance with law to avoid any policy problems that we may have. Also, we talked about the Federal Boat and Water Safety Program and our volunteer magazine. Their information and education programs come out of here, and the volunteer, which is so popular throughout the state of Minnesota, comes out of these areas as well. just some of the outcomes and measures, a brief one that we have looking at operation support. Transportation, our goal is to reduce DNR transportation fuel consumption by 25% in 2011 and by 50% in 2015. Looking at telecommunications issues, workstation to workstation video conferencing, the Skype technology that's out there. These are all technologies we need to take in hand and look at. The department drives 17 million miles a year currently. We need to reduce this number. We have to reduce this number, and we will reduce this number. We're using biofuels wherever at all possible, looking at alternative fleet technologies, batteries. We have a fleet of battery-operated cars in the park system right now, as you've heard. But looking at ethanol, using at other fuels, we've just recently established a hydrogen fueling station over at Fort Snelling State Park, working with other stakeholders to figure out, hey, let's show that this technology works. So we are very concerned about our energy consumption, and this slide just shows our consumption right now. E85 is increasing outstate, but most of our transportation takes place outstate, so that's one of the challenges we face.
Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, what type of vehicles do you have running on hydrogen?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, we have some hybrid vehicles. I can show you some pictures. I don't have any pictures in the display, but we're working with different technologies that are out there, Department of Commerce, as well as to show those technologies. It's basically a retrofitted motor vehicle.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, this is a fueling station that's in place now and that you're using, that's in use?
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, yeah, it just recently within the past several months came to fruition through some of the activities that the legislature has been working on. So I can provide more detail for the committee on that.
Sounds like something else we should go look at.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
That would be great. We would welcome that. Strategic objective number two, focusing on regional operations support, delivering the services critical to the public through regional operations. At the beginning, we've talked about our four regions located in Bemidji, Grand Rapids, New Ulm, and St. Paul here down at Warner Road. But making sure that we support the interdisciplinary problem solving that needs to take place across all disciplines, public education and cooperative partnerships. Some of the things that we're working here is our strategic land asset management programs, working with the counties, and we have some successful pilot projects with Roseau, Lake of the Woods, and other northern counties that have huge land masses, and working conjunctively together to make sure that we're consolidating land holdings wherever possible and achieving multiple goals of management with these local units of government. Technical assistance to local communities and stakeholders, elected officials, local administration of grants, information, education, and coordination of our emergency response assistance comes at our regional level. We have four regional directors and regional management teams that are the senior management of our regional operations in each region. And when there is a response, a fire, a flood, those regional directors and those teams become the incident command center or our incident response coordinators, depending on what type of response it is. But they're the first to respond and coordinate those activities and report back into the overall incident command center if one is established here in St. Paul. Just a quick outcome and measure on this. It's a very successful Metro Conservation Corridors program. This is an LCCMR-funded project talking about community partnerships and habitat. It just shows how regional coordination really can achieve an overall goal of conservation. Our regional operations in Region 3 help coordinate the interdisciplinary actions needed to ensure that meeting individual conservation targets are done in a way to meet our overall mission. So making sure that the little pieces all fit together and make a big piece kind of is the way that we like to look at it. Objective number three we talked about briefly is our recreation and local grants. This is an area of our grant where our grant housing functions are located. Providing financial assistance to local units of government, private organizations to acquire and develop outdoor recreation areas, and to protect and enhance natural areas. The programs that are housed here are local parks grants, natural and scenic area grants, conservation partner grants, environmental partnership grants, regional park grants outside the metropolitan area, remediation fund grants, and we were fortunate enough to have the faith of the legislature to have us authorize and administer the pool grants that were administered or appropriated last year. And because people know the system and are familiar with using that, the local recreational officials, workers, it was a great success, and it didn't have had minimal administrative costs associated with it.
Has all that money been spent?
Just about. The grants, it's all been encumbered, Madam Chair. The rest of it will go out here shortly. Talking about operations support, overall operations support, we manage several matching programs. This is just a map of that local initiative grants program that I have sent to folks. If you did not get a copy of this, I think Mr. Mueller has a copy of the funding history of our local initiative grants program and this overall map that just shows that outstate or greater regional, non-metro regional, greater Minnesota state, whatever you want to call those, the non-metro regional parks. This is a map of where those dollars have gone in the past. In FY 2008, we awarded one natural scenic area grant and one regional park grant protecting 183 acres, one in Douglas County and then Ojikita Regional Park in Chisago County. The demand for these dollars is much more than what we have. Some of that's outlined on that spreadsheet as well. But this is one area that we'll be talking with Senator Torres Ray's committee on Friday. Madam Chair, just to summarize, I'm going to use this table and then go through the funds and talk about the budget book a little bit. Overall, governor's recommendations for op support. Now, this does not include any of the Environmental Trust Fund dollars, so it's minus whatever else comes through the LCCMR recommendations. That would be added on to this, like the 0809 slide was. General Fund, $4.3 million. Natural Resources Fund, $1.4 million. Game and Fish Fund, $2.2 million. Special Revenue Funds, $3.3 million. And federal funding of $5.8 million, Madam Chair. The change item associated with this area, the one that I spoke of with Senator Frederickson's question, is overall agency-wide, the governor's budget recommendation is, in addition to the general fund cuts we've talked about, is a $1.933 million per year general fund cut across the agency. These reductions would be taken in four areas: management information services, looking at PC procurement, licensing, centralizing services, video conferencing, facility management. We have 185 buildings throughout the state. We need to make sure that we're located where we need to be. Multidisciplinary housing offices, looking at working with counties and local units of government to house our offices together with other local units of government wherever possible, make it more effective for everybody. So that site consolidation and closings, and also energy savings, just as everybody's looking at ways to reduce energy, efficient lighting, heating, cooling, things of that nature. Equipment management, we talked about the mileage a little bit, reduce our mileage, promote and require our eco-driving campaign. Eco-driving, I don't know how much you're familiar with it, is instead of sitting at a stoplight, try to turn whenever you can, and just promoting environmentally friendly ways of driving. You'd be amazed at the savings, especially when you drive as much as the department does, that could come up from that. And also telemetrics, looking at how we work together throughout the technology that are there. And this general expenditure reductions, what we're buying, buy less of things, make sure we're doing whatever we can to reduce our expenditures, Madam Chair. These are four areas we can provide more detail. We will be providing more detail to fiscal staff and committee members as we move forward with the development of the budget.
Okay. There's federal stimulus money for retrofitting public buildings for energy efficiency. Are you looking into some of those funds?
Madam Chair, we're in the process of exploring what the availability of federal stimulus monies might be. The DNR itself is not going to be awarded any of those federal stimulus dollars, except for in one area, wildfire protection. We will be administering some wildfire dollars to local units of government, but otherwise our facilities, upgrades, environment, energy efficiencies, and things like that, we will need to be participating through those programs, DEED and Department of Commerce. I look forward to providing you more detail on that as we find that out, because it is something that we need to take advantage of to leverage those dollars to achieve more of these types of savings. The more money we put at energy efficiency or facilities management, the more we'll save across the board in the future.
And these cuts will be spread across all departments?
Madam Chair, these are agency-wide reductions, yes.
Now, can you tell me how much, talk about the sort of the top level, how much is spent in the commissioner's office?
And Madam Chair, the overall commissioner's budget, let me see. And I need to provide a 08-09 commissioner's office budget was $2.4 million, but that includes more than just the commissioner's salaries and things like that. I need to break that out for you more. That would have travel, have our technology, the administrative overhead associated with the commissioner's office as well. So I will include that. The total number, 08-09, was $2.4 million. I'll provide a detailed breakdown of that as we prepare the comments for the committee, Madam Chair.
And do you know how many, you're an assistant commissioner. Are there other assistant commissioners or deputy commissioners?
Madam Chair, the commissioner's office is the commissioner's, Mark Holson, as you're well aware, deputy commissioner Lori Martinson, assistant commissioner Larry Kramka for operations, and I'm assistant commissioner for policy and government relations, and I also oversee our regional operations. So there's two assistants, one deputy, and I actually believe by law there could be another position. Historically, there was another position in the commissioner's office. Mm-hmm. And I will provide more detailed information on that, Madam Chair.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that would be very helpful, and I would like to see kind of a chart, too, because I think that we have program managers as well. And, you know, I just would like to visually see kind of the responsibilities. That would be very helpful because I'm not very familiar with this department, and I would like to see kind of the division of responsibilities in this agency.
Senator Anderson, yeah. Senator Ray.
Mr. Meyer.
Over the whole department or just?
Do
you, you like to see a department-wide organization chart?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes, I would like to see that, but I'm more interested in the administrative level positions, more detailed information about administrative level.
Problem, Madam Chair.
Great.
Madam Chair, the summary slide here, as you can see, the current general fund spending is $4.28 million. Other funds, $12.669. Those are the Natural Resources Fund, Special Revenue, Game and Fish Fund that we just discussed, and then the general fund reduction of that $3.886 million. And then just in summary, you know, managing for results is something that the department does take very seriously and has been actively doing for quite some time, and developing challenging indicators and benchmarks for all levels of government, measuring results and the use of outcomes to guide decisions and direct our work is a directive that we received from Governor Pawlenty in 2003, and we have not stopped doing that. And the more detailed information, I did have a meeting with fiscal staff and council on Friday, and we'll be developing complete detailed information on our budget proposals, presenting that to you, Madam Chair, within the next week or so. So I hope that will meet some of your needs for performance measurement. And just overall how we've looked at the development of our results and where we're at is the mission and goals and agency goals, breaking that down to strategic objectives and reinforcing that intersection of missions across all divisions, and then evaluating our performance to make sure that we are doing what we need to do and where that doesn't meet the needs, figuring out why and retooling those processes. This last slide is one that I just like to use. It really shows how all of our resources and our programs are interconnected with a forestry kind of example. Using a healthy forest, you need to have active timber management, which provides for habitat for wildlife species, which provide for wildlife viewing. On the other side, our healthy forest management promotes healthy ecosystems for trout and fishing and other opportunities as well. So really, our management, integrated resource management, is required for an active, healthy population, an active, healthy ecosystem, and to provide those recreational benefits that the citizens of the state of Minnesota so dearly enjoy. And thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity.
Do you want to talk for a minute about the merger?
Certainly, Madam Chair. I don't have any talking points with me, but you probably all saw a press release that went out last week about the ecological resources and waters proposal that we're doing, actually the combining of those two organizations to focus more on a watershed-level-based management approach as it relates to water appropriation and ecosystem management. What we're going to do is what we are doing is Assistant Commissioner Larry Crampa will be overseeing the strategic development process, assisted with Director Lacosmo, Director Hirsch, and some other key staff from those divisions over the next year to come up with the blueprint for this new organizational structure. We are not going to be seeking any budget changes this year, but perhaps next biennium or next year, we will need to come in and realign the budget with what we come up with, looking at how does the work of our hydrologists fit in with our biologists, making sure our water programs line up and work with our ecosystem management programs, aquatic plant management, for example, shoreline rulemaking, making sure that those decisions that are made in those areas of the water that are directly associated with that, are the impacts are being understood at the water and what it is doing to the water as well. So looking at more of a watershed-based approach is what we're really talking about. And looking at the outcome is to deliver all of our water tools, to talk about ecological resources, water systems, on a more efficient basis. So first people can go and talk about, as we're looking at water appropriations, that we understand the impacts that may be occurring to the ecosystem health that are out there. It's a more of a holistic approach and hopefully a more an effective approach to deliver the dollars that are out there that need to be delivered for the protection of these resources.
Question, Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, I think it was 3 years ago on the State Department's bill that became law. The department was mandated to sell some $5 million worth of land or resources. Could you give us a little update on where the department is on that and any problems you're having with that or concerns?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferguson, thank you so much. We are in the process of getting ready for the spring sale. The laws that were passed and then extended several times do say that, notwithstanding any other law to the contrary, we can sell land. So we're identifying lands that we received that were not donated, that for the most part we received through custodial control from the Department of Administration, Department of Veterans Affairs. If they were purchased, not purchased with stamp dollars or bond dollars, so those are very limited. Making sure that we look at the acquisition source of those lands, and we'll be trying to sell, putting those parcels up for sale here in the near future. One that we're looking at, working with the city of Hastings, they're considering annexing it's a 40-acre wildlife management area that's encroached on all sides by housing development. So they're interested in getting that back into a development type situation. That was acquired through the Veterans Affairs or Health and Human Services Department, I think, several years ago. We're hoping to meet those goals. I know there is legislation pending in the Senate and in the House that would prohibit us from selling any units of the Outdoor Rec Act to fund that general fund mandate. My conversations with the Department of Finance, however, indicates, at least right now, that they would still come to the department for an unallotment number, probably for most of that $4 million that's remaining, since we do own all of the land. So while I understand and recognize the concern the legislature has by passing that bill, it will be another $3.5-4 million hit to the department.
How many, you mentioned one WMA that you're going to be trying to sell. How many other ones are on the list?
Madam Chair, there's several other isolated parcels that are small that have been encroached. I can get the most up. That'd probably be the best thing for me to do is send an email so you can send out to the committee staff, committee members, with our updated list and the dates that are out there. It does contain
like
other parcels as well.
Yeah, we haven't really heard about the list since January, so I'd like to see that.
I will get
and
that.
The committee members would like to see that.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, is it your expectation that when you've made these sales, you'll have met the requirements of that law?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferguson, the outstanding obligation is about $4 million currently right now. I'm not aware of any other divisions, or I should say agencies, that are trying to reach the requirements that are out there. There is a Wilder Foundation land, the Boy and Girl Scout Camp. It's not a Boy Scout camp, but it was the Wilder Foundation land up in Senator Lowry's district. that the department did acquire back from the current owners that's also up for sale. So we're hopeful to meet that goal. The number right now is $4 million that needs to be met.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions? All right, thank you. We'll look forward to getting that more detailed information from you
thank
on
you, Madam
several
Chair.
Issues and that information that you've been bringing to the House we haven't seen yet.
It's not done yet, so as soon as we get it ready,
okay.
We'll get it to you.
All right.
Thank Great. You very much.
Thank you. We'll see you again soon. And next we'll bring up Len Price. And some of his people he works with, the young people he works with.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm Len Price, Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservation Corps, and it's good to be among friends. It's been a while since I've seen some of you. It's my pleasure today to try to present about five different parts of a presentation about our organization and talk about the revenue picture for us and also update you about some of the activities that happened actually during the conference committee, which I don't think some members are really aware of, about the appropriation that we got from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and we'd like to update you about that as well.
Great.
I did not provide
copies
of our legislatively mandated report to all of the committee members with the notion of trying to save trees. This was delivered to the fiscal staff, was delivered to the chairperson's office, and I think also delivered to the committee administrator's office. It's a report that talks about all the state appropriations that we get. So that's available, and we'll make reference to a couple of the things that are in here, but if you want a copy of this, we're very, very happy to provide it for you. Committee administrator offered to run it for us, but we said maybe we'd want to save some trees. So
if anyone wants to look at it, we've got a copy, our copy. Don has a copy.
What we'd like to do here is run through a very quick history of our program with a PowerPoint presentation. Then we're going to unplug, hear from one of our core members, and then we will talk about our annual report, which actually can walk us through many of the topics that you might be interested in. Then take a look at the Bowser report, what has happened to our request with the budget, with the governor's budget, and then take questions. So that's where we're headed here. And where is my able assistant here? You know, it's a good thing I got out of teaching when I did, because I was right on the cusp of all this technology, and I would have had a big fat F on my report. Are you ready? By the way, I have many people from our organization with us today. I'd just like to introduce them while we're waiting for this thing
sure.
to get organized. Maybe they can stand up so you can see who they are. Tim Johnson Grass is a former MCC Corps member who went through lots of different experiences. He's the person who is the manager of our young adult program for 18 to 25-year-olds. Next to him is Katie Bredigan, who is an assistant district manager for our young adult program here in the metro area. Next to her is Candace McElroy, who is an assistant to Tim in the young adult program. Both of them went through our program as well. And then Brian Miller, who also went through our program and is now the district manager for the young adult program in the metropolitan area. He has responsibility for four crews here in the metro area. And then Sharissa Brudnick is our human resources person, works on a part-time basis for us. And she's got three boys, and she's warming us up so that they can participate when they get old enough. And then Eric Antonson is the director, program director for the youth program. And we now have two portions of our youth program that we'll be talking about. And then the young man next to Eric is Eric Adams, and you'll be hearing from him about his experience in our program. So are we ready?
Looks like you don't spend too much on your uniforms. That's good to keep it simple, but good branding. Everybody's got their T-shirts.
We'll share that with the development director.
Oh,
she
like
keeps
it.
Pounding that into our heads that we need to do better branding.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, if we aren't able to do this, I can summarize what we do easily without the PowerPoint. Such luck.
Member in the DNR part of it?
Okay, if
they have their own
we tab. Can't do this, we'll do it the old-fashioned way.
Members, there is a tab in your budget book for the MCC. There it is.
Yep. All right. Also, you have our annual report. I asked staff to put it in. And we can use that as an easy way to talk about all of the things that we need to visit about. It's like reading the newspaper together. So you'll notice that our front cover talks about our message, which is resources restored and lives changed. It's a picture of a crew of young people working someplace in the state of Minnesota on a set of stairs. It looks like they have not had an opportunity to be maintained for quite a while. You turn to the inside of the front cover. You can see our mission statement in kind of the rust-colored portion. And staff, I got a bunch of these in my briefcase if you want to grab them. Our mission is to provide hands-on environmental stewardship and service training opportunities to youth, which we define as 15 to 18, and young adults, 18 to 25, while accomplishing conservation, natural resource management, and emergency response work. We were part of the Department of Natural Resources until 2003. During that time, Governor Ventura's budget cut the funding to MCC within the DNR, and we became a 501c3 nonprofit, and that's how we've operated ever since. We have two programs. You can see underneath the picture the one called Young Adult Program. As I said, these are 18 to 25-year-old young adults. They come from a variety of places and experiences. Many of them are college graduates who wish to, at some point in time, enter the career path of a natural resource person, sometimes to nonprofits. The program is associated with the AmeriCorps program, and consequently, they're eligible after a full year of work for what is called an education award. That award has never been changed since the inception of AmeriCorps. It's still worth $4,725 after a year of work. This is essentially a amount of money that's set aside by the corporation that runs the AmeriCorps program. We don't pay it. They do. It is a voucher, if you would, that can be taken to any college or university in the country, and the individual can pursue further education, or they can pay off previous college debt. It is one of the incentives for being engaged in an AmeriCorps program. We have these crews scattered across the state of Minnesota. Oftentimes, we're co-located with the Department of Natural Resources by our tradition and history and our connection with the DNR. We're still a big partner. They are still a big partner for us. We just started last week. 82 enthusiastic, smiling, young adult corps members who are ready to go now, be trained for the next couple of weeks, and then they will start to engage in the work that we will line up for them. Usually they work in crews of 4 to 5 people. They work 4 10-hour days because we're willing to travel some distance to the work site, so the extra 2 hours is typically for travel. As I said, many of the folks that are in the group here with us today were involved in that program. The Summer Youth Program is for high school youngsters. It is a residential program. 15 through 18-year-olds will leave home. Usually they arrive at the camp in St. Croix State Park on Father's Day, and then they get a week's worth of training. These folks then will go off to a variety of places throughout the state of Minnesota to do work. They do not use power tools. The young adult program knows how to do skilled work with power equipment. These youngsters do not. They learn to work together. They learn a lot of basic job skills. They live on site in tents all summer. They cook together. They have educational opportunities. They work 35 hours a week. At the end of the summer, they can go home with about $1,100. For some of them, it's the very first time that they've had a paycheck. Eric will talk about his experience in that program. The Youth Outdoors, or YO program, as we refer to it, is brand new for us. We are partnering with the City of St. Paul, specifically with their Parks Department. And this is a program that takes 15 and 16-year-old economically disadvantaged youngsters 2 days a week after school for 2 to 3 hours a day. We provide training and an educational experience for them. And then on Saturdays, they actually go do field work within the St. Paul Parks Department. We tried 12 youngsters in the program last fall. We're going to start it up in about 3 weeks again, and this time we will have 24 youngsters in the program. I think it's the way that we can go in the future to try to give those individuals who don't want to leave home for 8 weeks in the summer program have an experience getting their hands outdoors and doing outdoor work. It's a grand sight to see what happens to not only their attitudes but their skill level. Many of them have never had any experience like this before.
Do they get paid too?
And they get paid. They, I think they got about $500 or so for the 8 weeks. This spring program, we will engage them for 12 weeks. And we get the funding for their stipend through the St. Paul Park and Rec Department, which in turn gets the money from the Youth Corps funding that they receive, which incidentally was nipped by the governor's budget. So we have a concern about that as well. Those are our basic programs. I forgot to mention that with the young adult crew members, they are they receive a lot of training, and one of the slides we had would have showed that. They are all wildfire certified firefighters. So that means that we respond to the wildfires when we are asked to by the Department of Natural Resources. We have a special contract with ENR to respond. Last summer, kind of a slow summer. But let me tell you, the summer before that, when this state was ablaze, we spent hundreds and hundreds of hours responding to fires across the state of Minnesota. Because we're also trained, those folks are also well-trained in chainsaw work, we do emergency response in other parts of the country at the request of FEMA. We were at the Gulf Coast after both Katrina and Rita. We were in Missouri after an ice storm shortly after Christmas. We were in Iowa last year after their floods. In Minnesota, in the southeastern part of the state, Lanesboro, east or west of Winona, Rushford, we went there and did emergency response work, and then we did recovery work. We spent a lot of time there. There's a picture in the next page of the Farmers Community Park. There's a story about the work that was done in this very small park, which has really no funding to keep it open. It was devastated by the floods after those heavy rains. We planted over 100 trees. We cleaned up their playground equipment, helped rehab some of their buildings. Without a cost-effective work crew like MCC, this just would not have been possible. So we're very proud of our ability to do that. It is part of our mission of doing public service, and oftentimes is the thing that our core members remember most fondly. If I could draw your attention to the third page in, which at the top has Christy Ramos's picture, one of the things of our that is a real feature of our summer youth program is that we engage 15 to 20% of the positions, the 90 positions that we have, and we reserve them for deaf and hard of hearing youngsters. And Christy is an example of a core member that is deaf who was part of our program. that's a touching story. I recommend you read it on your time. We were trying to get Christy to come today, but school conflicts in her schedule. To the right of her picture is a snapshot of the things that we've done in 2008. And it's hard to wrap your arms around all this because, you know, it's acres or miles or feet or pounds. We put it in there to show the diversity of the experience that a Corps member has that serves in our Corps. It's going to depend on where you are located as to some of the things that you're actually going to be engaged in. Not every single Corps member gets to do all of these different things. If you're up in Senator Saxhaud's neck of the woods, you're going to be involved in forestry kind of things. If you're down in Senator Vickerman's prairie region, then it's going to be more of the prairie kinds of things. If you're located here in the metro area, you might do a whole ton of work over in Senator Ellen Anderson's community at Como Park doing shoreline restoration or a variety of other things. It's varied with the three big ecosystems that we have in our state. But also you can see the numbers that we deal with in terms of the number of Corps members. 82 youth in the summer youth program finished the program, 81 young adults. You can see that we did an awful lot of work measured in hours as well. Okay, let's turn to our young man here because he can tell his story, and it fits in with, if you go to the inside of the last cover, there's a section at the top of the left-hand side above all the revenue charts called real results. These are some of the things that we measure when we ask Corps members about their experiences. What did you get out of this program? What did you learn about things like working on a team, or have you ever felt more physically fit, or have you had an experience with problem-solving skills or whatever? I mean, we can tell you what we do for the dollar you give us. But the value added of this is what happens to young people like this gentleman. So if I may, I'd like to introduce Eric Adams. And Eric would like to share what his story is, and I'm sure he would be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Eric.
Well, my name is Eric Adams, and I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. And I moved out to Minnesota when I was about 15 years of age. And my first year out here, I spent the summer with the Minnesota Conservation Corps. And ever since, I've been going back. I've never spent the summer in the cities working at a fast food restaurant or any other job because I love my first experience. And these experiences I had, it's amazing. The things I can do, the people I meet, the life stories that I hear, and all the jobs that I've done, like creating boardwalks or trail work. Just a lot of work is fun. You know, meeting a lot of people. Just deaf people. I met deaf people for my first time and I learned to do sign language. And I was like, whoa, I think I can do that. And the experiences of just traveling. My first year, I went up to, the Boundary Waters. And I was like, whoa. You know, it was crazy. It was fun, too. And I learned how to swim up there, too. So we did work up there repairing trails. And we had the canoe to work every day, and I was kind of happy that my canoe never tipped over. And I got the experience just of being in the wilderness, you know, just like knowing things, like out of nowhere, things I wouldn't think I would be able to know. And it was so new to me coming from the big cities and just having these experiences. I try to tell my friends about them, but they don't quite understand too well. So I think it's just my experience that I have and that they have to find out on their own. And I just think that the Minnesota Conservation Corps is a wonderful place to be in, that a lot of people should experience it if they haven't. And because I came through a lot coming from here. You know, I came here to Minnesota and joined this Minnesota Conservation Corps. You know, it changed my attitude about things. It changed my opinions about things. You know, it just made me want to increase my knowledge about nature and about you know, just people and understanding things. It's amazing to me. So, anybody have any questions?
Questions, anybody? Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Eric. Where are you in school now?
Well, right now I attend Merck Alternative High School. I'm a current graduate of 09, and this will be my fourth year here, so I'm considered an early graduate. And I'll be done a week from now. Well, not a week, but March 2nd. And I leave school at noon every day for 4 days a week.
Yep. Senator Rummel?
And so what do you plan after you finish?
Well, after high school, I plan on, like, really, I'm going to college for sure. But I'm not too sure for what, though. No, I'm considering conservation work a lot, even culinary arts. There are plenty of things I'm considering, but I think conservation has the upper hand because it's what I like doing. You know, I like using my energy and getting out there and exploring.
Oh, we wish you lots of luck.
Thank you.
So what are some of the real skills that you've learned while you've had these jobs?
Well, you learn leadership, that's for sure. That's one of the big things you learn is leadership. And you learn how to use tools, of course. It's activity that we do, like when we take a break between work. Between work, we take a break and we do this activity where we learn about nature or different things we didn't learn about. And I think we call it EA for educational activity or something like that. I don't remember. But it's for outdoor education. And you learn about nature, different trees, and we even do scavenger hunts to find different types of bugs or something like that. Just activity things. And you also pick up knowledge as well, like as you go along with the program. Like the knowledge of, you know, working with different tools and creating new things. Now, and everybody has their different abilities and who can perform good or not, but when we work in this program, the team is like put together so well that everyone has their advantages in something, and we put those advantages together and do the best we can in completing projects. I've completed with a crew a deer disclosure, boardwalks, deer horse steps. And a lot of trail work. And I've been to Teta Gulch, Split Rock, and some other places I visit around Minnesota.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming and telling us a little bit about your experience. We appreciate that very much.
Madam Chair, maybe what we can do, since Eric brought up some of the accomplishments, maybe, Ashley, we can get to the end of the slideshow,
sure,
or we can show you some of the pictures of the projects that these young people have been able to complete. You know, we do like to trace our roots to the CCC, so some of the things that we do are very much like they did. Of course, sometimes they did much more sophisticated things because they had stonework or log work. We're aspiring to that. Someday we're going to get the learned, experienced man to be a lead in our crew, and we'll do some of that sophisticated work. But we still do a lot of great things all over the state.
Do you want to talk about the Forest Service?
Oh, yes. This is important, too. What happens to these young people? As you asked Eric what his intentions are as he graduates from high school, what'd you do with that? We can show you what we see as results of or post-service path of our core members. Maybe just leave it that size.
Okay.
Just leave it that size.
I don't want to risk it.
33% of our core members are employed in a related field. 26% return to a program like ours, maybe in another part of the country or to ours, in a leadership capacity. Many of them went back to school. Unfortunately, today, a bachelor's degree is oftentimes not enough. You have to go back and get a master's, which adds to your financial burden as you begin your life. And then 11% of them enlisted in another kind of community service or AmeriCorps program. I should mention, there are 136 conservation corps in the United States. There are 126,000 corps members in those programs. They are not all conservation corps like ours. Some of them run charter schools. Some of them are involved in recycling programs. I would say we're the rather rare, unique type of program because of what we do. And we are looking very closely at trying to garner revenue from the stimulus package at the federal level. We can talk a little bit more about that later on. Okay, let's see some... let's go to some of the pictures.
Oh, there is.
Hmm. And of course, you know, we have more pictures and stories than we've got time for, but this was a project done by high school age youngsters in cooperation with some of the young adult program members. You know, at the end of the summer, you can say, what did you do? And you can tell your friends, well, I built some rock stairs at Taylor's Falls, Minnesota, and they'll probably be there until the next ice age. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a huge accomplishment. I think these pictures were taken in your district, Senator Anderson, at Como. A lot of shoreline restoration. The coconut hull log there is designed to reduce the wave action that continually erodes under the bank. So you try to reduce that, and then you lay the mat down and plant what are good species of plants there to hold that bank from further erosion. I walked over there last fall to look at some of these projects, and this coconut log here just deteriorates and becomes part of the natural vegetation. And if you could keep the geese away, you got a chance at this, but that's a real challenge.
Yeah,
they are a challenge in every place.
Rain gardens are becoming a real popular thing, and it isn't just because of their beauty. It's because it's a way to recharge groundwater. This summer, we are anticipating installing 22 rain gardens in the city of Duluth as part of a sea grant operation and in conjunction with the University of Minnesota Duluth. And we have lots of reason to believe that we will be able to do a lot more of these. But this is one that we did, I don't know where it was, but it's pretty typical. Picture on the left with Representative Hackbarth in it was when we did the forest inventory. All the state forest trails were inventoried by us in anticipation of DNR trying to decide which routes would become the mechanized routes. This is 2004, I believe. So we did global positioning work and gave all the data to the DNR. I heard the other day when I told somebody how much we did it for, they said, well, you guys are a soft sell. You should have charged a lot more than you did. It was the first time I've ever had somebody tell it to me. But a great experience for our core members. Forest inventories, you measure the tree's girth and you note the species and so on. And then the decisions about how it's going to be logged and when and so on takes place from that information. And the lower right picture is part of a fish survey. I don't know that much about it, but this is the bird man of MCC. This guy has identified more birds than any of us in this room collectively in our lifetimes. And he loved this project. It's from Grand Rapids area. Chainsaw, as I said, is a big tool for us, so our core members receive a lot of chainsaw work. This is up on the Superior Hiking Trail. They're all smiling, so they must have felt real good at the end of the day's work.
I hiked up there last fall, and it looked pretty good.
Yeah, somebody told me they went into one of the What's the name of the falls at the border? Pigeon Falls?
Yeah.
And someplace along the way, there's a notebook hanging from a post, and it said, "We hauled dot, 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 use your imagination, wood." And it was the MCC crew that helped do some of the work there. And they did. They labored greatly to haul all that stuff in on their backs, which is why you have to be young to be in the MCC. As I said, all of our young adult program core members are wildfire certified trained. They go through a program that's certified by the U.S. Forest Service. So as a result of that, we not only fight wildfires, but we can do prescribed burns. We've been doing that for some time in conjunction with DNR. We think there'll be more of this because it's a way to manage prairies and other ecosystems. In emergency response, I think the picture on the left was Roseau in the early 90s. We responded there, and I believe that's Comfrey after the tornado in March. I don't recall the year.
97.
Okay. And as I said, we've been in other emergency response situations as well. Our core members like to do that. We don't make money going. We do it. We try to cover our costs of the corps doing that. But that's kind of that's not unique to the Minnesota Conservation Corps. There are other corps in the country that do that as well. We've had all kinds of different experiences that have been none outdoors. In emergency response as well. We once ran a deployment, receiving, repackaging, and deployment operation at an abandoned Kmart Bay St. Louis, I think. No, where, Katie?
New Iberia.
New Iberia in Louisiana, right? Katie was there for 30 days, and all we did was work inside the warehouse. They got a little stir crazy after a while. And you know where they slept? In the car wash. on cots. So it was a great experience.
Madam Chair, must have been interesting showers in the morning.
Showers? Who takes showers? So I think that's the end of it, isn't it?
Senator Pariseau, hang on a sec. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I have a question of Mr. Price. Did you have any of the people with us today at Maltby Preserve? Get it out there, Pat. In Goodhue County? At the Maltby Family Preserve, because he's written up in your material.
I'm not sure. I'm seeing nods of affirmative nods over there by our director.
Yeah, we've done a number of projects with Maltby over the years.
They're quite a good family-owned operation.
And our
instructional for the young people.
Our efforts here.
I want to call you Senator Price, so if that's okay.
I almost did too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Our purpose here is never to usurp any public employee positions or union positions or to be a competitor with the private sector. We are trying to provide these opportunities for young people because it's part of public service, but it's also a way to help them get job skill training and so on, go on to something else. And all of our work is done on public land, or if it's done on private land, it's done within the revenue source of a public program. So, for example, we've done shoreline restoration on people's property in lake regions, but that's because it was part of a DNR lakeshore restoration, for example. Some of the staff and members have visited our crews, and I recall, I can't remember exactly where we were in the metro area, but we were actually planting things on the bank of a small water collection pond, and we were standing in somebody's yard talking about this, but it was part of a publicly funded program. So I want to make that clear to everybody. I think Mr. Mueller was there, and I'm sorry, I can't remember this new person's
Ms.
name.
Doyle.
Ms. Doyle? O'Doyle? Doyle.
We need to get to the budget
yes.
details pretty quick or we're going to run out of time. But first, Senator Torres Ray has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious about some of your demographics. It says in here that 40% of participants are youth of color, which is impressive. And I wanted you to tell me a little bit about your recruitment efforts. How do you recruit? And in terms of demographics, is there any particular region of the state where most children come from, or could you tell us more about that?
Thanks for the question. The 40% is in our summer program. We've not been able to achieve anything close to that in our young adult program. We recruit with people that we've known before, counselors and teachers at lots of high schools. We get siblings. We get people who send their children to our program. Ideally, a crew of six young or summer youth program folks would be two metro kids from the inner city, two suburban kids, and two outstate Minnesota kids, because it's just a wonderful learning experience to have them be together. And then if we can have a racial mixture, and then if we could get a deaf student in that crew, we got something going on for 8 weeks for dynamics within the summer program. We don't always get there, but we do recruit around the state, and we rely upon word of mouth. We advertise. If you know of any youngsters who are interested, for example, about our summer program, you can go to our website. All the schedule applications are right on there. And we'd be happy to provide you with any of these materials if you would like to send it to your local schools or take it there. That's how we get folks. So if we could, I'll use this annual report to quickly go through the revenue picture. If you look at the page with the pie charts, and the right-hand side shows where we get our support and revenue. The light green piece of the pie represents the $475,000 of general fund money that we currently get, which in the governor's budget was cut by 5%. We could live with 5%, but I know from my experience here that this is chapter one in a mighty long book. So I don't know what happens to our general fund appropriation by the time you folks have to grind out the decision. But if you can help us maintain that, that helps us with our operating portion of our program. Those dollars we use for running our program, for our administrative and general operations. That has increased slightly since we left the Department of Natural Resources. I think the first year we got $250,000 of general fund. So it's at 5% less than the 475 that we had in our base. The other state money that comes our way is from the rust-colored portion of the pie, the State Natural Resource Fund, which the DNR garners from boat licenses, ATV licenses, et cetera, and which is dedicated statutorily to specific purposes. So it's restricted in terms of how it can be spent. Each year, we sit down with the divisions at DNR, and we say, okay, what is your work plan? What would you like us to do? We have a rate, and it's $22 an hour, and we say, all right, how many hours do you want to dedicate to water access? How many hours to trails? How many hours to this, that, and the other thing? And I'm sorry, I thought I had a copy of that page from our report, but it's in there, and I'm sure staff can provide it for you. So to my knowledge, that has not been reduced. DNR is happy with what we do and I think would like to continue to provide that for us. Then I would call your attention to the light blue slice of pie. Now, this is something that we didn't talk about here when we made our presentation last time. This is a product of the conference committee. The Bowser, or Board of Water and Soil Resources, is a pass-through agency. And they help soil water conservation districts and water management districts complete projects. So in the conference committee, because we had House authors who were encouraging this, and I have to say thank you to Chair Anderson as well, because her fingerprints are all over that as well. But we were given $500,000 of general fund dollars for contracted services with Bowser. We sat down and we developed, Tim Johnson Grass is responsible for this, developed a procedure where SWCDs and water districts, water management districts, came to Bowser with a proposal to do work. And then within the parameters of that clean water money, because that's where it came from, that $25 million of clean water money that was appropriated 2 years ago, the decisions were made, yes, this is a project that fits the criteria, and MCC will do the work. And this is what we anticipate will be the number of hours it will take us, ergo the cost. Give or take, whatever it took, we adjusted it. But we will have completely exhausted that $500,000 by the end of this construction year, and we will have completed close to 60 projects. And the other handout that you received from us has a list of those projects and where they're located. And I thought I was going to be clever and figure out whose district it was in, but I gave that up in a hurry because I don't know the boundaries of some of these saltwater conservation districts. You do. You know your districts well enough to know if the Cedar River is in your district or Lyon SWCD or if Sherburn or whomever. Senator Fredrickson is waving.
Lyon County.
But these folks had, I hate to overuse the word shovel ready, but they had projects ready to go. They were approved by Bowser, and so this is the way that money got spent. And in a committee on the other body, there was testimony given by Bowser's staff that they were very, very pleased with what we did. And I think if they were recipients of the money again, they would do the same thing. So if you're looking for a model, a vehicle, a strategy to give MCC some money, this could be the way to do it again. And, you know, we do the work. It's not a gift to us. It's a way to get the work done. And on the back side of the handout of the first page, you can see, again, the kind of work that was done, just like all of our other SAW reports. We call them Survey of Accomplished Work SAW reports. It illustrates what that is. And then the second page illustrates the procedure that's used to do this. So this was new ground. It worked well. We think, you know, we don't know what is in store for us with the general fund dollars. But if there is a chance for us to somehow get into the clean water money from the 3/8 sales tax, from the amendment that the voters passed, this would be a model that would work well for us and I think for the public. The same thing for the Heritage Council, which is, you know, controversial, and my gosh, they got their work cut out for them. Senator Anderson's the only woman on that council, I noticed last night when I was sitting there watching the proceedings. But those are sources that may work to help MCC continue to do its work. And I'm not here as a decision maker any longer. I know how tough those decisions are, but I'm just offering that as a suggestion that you may consider.
Well, we're certainly going to be putting more dollars into clean water projects, land restoration all over the state, and so there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think, you know, I think there's broad support in the legislature for the MCC because we've seen the work that you do and that the good results that you get for kids and for natural resource projects, both. So it's been very good. So we'll keep working together, and I bet we'll find some more opportunities.
Great. And the last thing I wanted to underscore about the two pie charts, you'll notice the dark blue part of the chart. We take the dollars you give us and leverage fee-for-service work. So there's a whole host of other people that we go to do the work, and they contribute to the revenue stream as well. And we've listed those over 100 folks on the right-hand side of this annual report, some of which may be in your district as well. And the other thing, the last thing I'll say about the pie charts, you'll notice that we plow a lot, almost all of this money back into our programs. We are one of the leanest operating nonprofits around. We don't have a whole lot of money that goes into our operation. Thank goodness there are a lot of people who have the spirit of the nonprofit world that say, I don't need to make a lot of money in my life, but I'd like to go to bed every night thinking I've contributed something to better my community or my state. And those young people over there are of that ilk, and I'm happy that they work for the Minnesota Conservation Board. So
that's great. Well, thank you.
Any questions?
I think we're about out of time, but thanks for a great presentation, and we really appreciate the enthusiasm you have for what you do and for the young people that came with you and also have that enthusiasm. It's really contagious. So
good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you all. And with that, remember, members, Thursday Water Subcommittee and Friday Parks and Trails Retreat-type Subcommittee. What's the timeline on the Friday meeting?
8:30 to 11:30.
Okay, and that's been moved to room 15, correct?
That's correct.
So it's easy to get there. All right, with that, the meeting's adjourned.
We're talking about
yeah.